On the show today, the latest from the NATO summit in Vilnius.
Sweden's accession was secured after alliance member Turkey dropped its objections, partly because of Biden agreeing to push the sale of American-made F-16 fighter jets.
Plus, as NATO discusses allowing Ukraine into the alliance someday, Ukraine's neighbor to the west is feeling a little vulnerable.
The country is sharply divided among Romanian speakers, European Union supporters, and people whose primary language is Russian.
And later, controversial judicial reform is moving forward in Israel, and football returns to Zimbabwe. Today is Wednesday, July 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. There's more political turmoil in Israel. We'll find out about that in a moment. Now, though, to Vilnius, Lithuania, where U.S. President Joe Biden said on Tuesday that this year's NATO summit represents a historic moment as the security bloc prepares to enlarge while tackling issues around the grinding war in Ukraine. But although the path has been cleared for Sweden's inclusion in the alliance, Kyiv is not getting a timetable for its own membership. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara reports from Vilnius.
On the first day of the NATO summit in Vilnius, Lithuania, the alliance agreed to welcome Ukraine to become a member without giving a time frame. NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg.
And then the decision to remove the requirement for a membership action plan, which actually means that instead of two steps to become a member, there will now be one step. We also made it clear that the invitation will be issued when conditions are met.
Stoltenberg's proposal is a compromise. Some leaders, including U.S. President Joe Biden, worry a fast track for Ukraine membership means war with Russia. Meanwhile, Baltic states, including summit host Lithuania, think it will be a deterrence. All members showed support for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who attended the summit.
Thank you for your help for our defense, for your clear, honest and bold position on your invitation for Ukraine to join NATO.
NATO leaders also renewed their commitment to spend at least 2% of GDP on defense amid Russia's war on Ukraine. Moscow's aggression has driven countries to join the alliance, soon turning it into a 32-nation bloc. U.S. President Joe Biden.
And this is a historic moment. The adding of Finland and Sweden to NATO is consequential.
Sweden's accession was secured after alliance member Turkey dropped its objections, partly because of Biden agreeing to push the sale of American-made F-16 fighter jets that Ankara has long sought to purchase. Sweden has agreed to back Turkey's bid to join the European Union. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
I believe that it is now time for consultations at the level of heads of state within the scope of the strategic mechanism, and today I see this meeting at the NATO margins as the first step towards that.
The summit ends Wednesday, and Biden will head to Helsinki to meet with Nordic leaders. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News, Vilnius.
On Tuesday, Israel's parliament gave the initial approval to a bill that limits some of the Supreme Court's power. It's part of a controversial judicial overhaul by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing coalition that's set off a deep political crisis. Reuters' Ryan Chang reports.
Shouts of shame from opposition politicians in Israel's parliament, the Knesset, early Tuesday, as a controversial bill to rein in the Supreme Court's power passed the first out of three votes. The overhaul, led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing coalition, won support from 64 out of 120 seats. The new bill strips judges of power to void decisions from government and elected officials and deem them unreasonable. Just before the vote, Netanyahu said in a video statement, "The bill is not the end of democracy, it strengthens democracy." His remarks did little to calm protesters in Jerusalem, who swarmed outside the parliament on Monday ahead of the vote. Critics fear Netanyahu is curbing judicial powers as he stands trial for corruption on charges he denies.
We're coming to wherever the coalition members are in order to send our message loud and clear that what this government is doing is not okay. Democracy is under attack. Israeli rights are under attack. The rights of Israeli citizens are under attack. And we're here to protect that and to say stop the coup, stop the judicial coup.
Central Bank Governor Amir Yaron has urged the government to seek broad agreements over legislative changes in order to safeguard institutional independence. On Monday, he pointed to the costs of prolonged political uncertainty, citing a falling shekel and an underperforming stock market. Netanyahu, who is on trial on graft charges he denies, has played down economic fallout from the campaign. Protesters, meanwhile, promised to come out in force on Tuesday with no signs of tensions abating as the bill heads to its second and the final third readings.
That's Ryan Chang of Reuters reporting for us today. South African business groups are pushing the government to make strong diplomatic efforts to ensure that the country is not stripped of its duty-free access to the U.S. market. A group of U.S. senators recently questioned South Africa's status under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, citing Pretoria's ties with Moscow. South Africa has invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to an August summit, despite his invasion of Ukraine and his arrest warrant issued by the International Criminal Court. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Relations between Pretoria and Washington have so deteriorated in recent months that South African business groups are now scrambling to try and make sure the country isn't kicked out of an important U.S. tariff-free program. The war in Ukraine has divided the two countries after South Africa refused to condemn Russia's invasion, even going so far as hosting Russian warships for joint military exercises earlier this year. In May, the U.S. ambassador to South Africa alleged the country had secretly supplied arms to Moscow, something Pretoria denies. It is unclear whether Russian President Vladimir Putin will be attending the summit of the BRICS Group of Emerging Economies in Johannesburg in August. His visit would place South Africa in a quandary. As a signatory to the International Criminal Court, it is obliged to arrest him should he set foot in the country. The U.S. Congress is beginning to review the renewal of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, with a decision expected by the end of the year. Some U.S. senators recently wrote a letter saying South Africa should no longer host an AGOA forum set for later this year. They also raised the prospect that the country could lose access to its trade benefits entirely. Busiswe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, an independent association of some of South Africa's largest businesses, said she was preparing a submission urging the U.S. to renew South Africa's participation in AGOA.
There'd be dire financial consequences if we were to lose this. A loss of this trade relationship would mean billions of rands of economic activity as well as tens of thousands of jobs which depend on those exports would be lost. It would be devastating for employment, especially in a country where we are currently sitting with 70% youth unemployment.
Mavuso said South Africa is the largest single beneficiary country under AGOA, with 25% of the country's exports going to the U.S. and nearly $1 billion worth of exports to the U.S. in the first 3 months of this year alone. Wendile Selobo, chief economist of the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa, said being removed from AGOA would have far-reaching implications, not just on the tariff side, but in terms of investor sentiment.
But the AGOA benefits, there's certain industries that really enjoy those, and in the absence of them, there could be economic consequences, particularly in the automobile industry, and of course, the agricultural sector, specifically wine, as well as the fruit sector.
South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance, which has expressed strong support of Ukraine, is also worried the country could lose access to AGOA. Spokespersons for the presidency and South Africa's Ministry of International Relations did not reply to requests for comment. However, they have previously said there's no evidence South Africa is going to lose access to AGOA after President Cyril Ramaphosa recently sent a delegation to lobby U.S. officials. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Cocoa farmers in Cameroon have blocked hundreds of tons of the beans from leaving their farms and are staging daily street protests demanding they be allowed to sell their crops to Nigeria, where they can get higher prices and where they don't face threats from separatists. India will launch a mission to the moon on Friday. The mission marks the Indian Space Research Organization's second attempt. A previous effort at the moon nearly 4 years ago failed. Ukrainian officials said Tuesday that Russian forces attacked Kyiv and the southern port city of Odessa with Iranian-made Shahed drones. And as U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen concluded her trip to China, the ink was barely dry on China's sweeping new foreign relations law that appears to be aimed at countering U.S. trade sanctions. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have been troubled by the effects of artificial lighting on visual observations of the cosmos. Human-made technology now affects radio astronomy, or the study of distant celestial objects at radio frequencies. A new study suggests radio waves leaking from large satellite constellations. Groups of satellites working together as a network could threaten radio astronomy exploration. Researchers using LOFAR, the biggest low-frequency radio telescope, observed 68 satellites from SpaceX's Starlink satellite constellation in April 2022. They say they detected something called unintended electromagnetic radiation originating from electronics on board the Starlink satellites. Study authors say further scientific evaluation to include other satellite systems is ongoing. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
From Washington, it's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Football fans in Zimbabwe are rejoicing. We'll find out why in a few minutes. Now, Russia's prolonged aggression in Ukraine has raised fears that Moldova could be next on the Kremlin's list. Like Ukraine, Moldova has close cultural ties to Russia, but unlike Ukraine, Moldova's armed forces are weak, making the small nation vulnerable. Marcus Harton narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau.
The 22nd Battalion of the Moldovan Army celebrates its 27th anniversary this year. These soldiers have participated in international peace missions in Kosovo and South Sudan. For the Moldovan High Command, the participation of its troops in international missions is this tiny country's best guarantee of recognition, and they hope protection from foreign intervention.
It's a small country. The tactics and strategies should be completely different, and we put our focus not only on defense, but contribution to peacekeeping cooperation international with partners and assisting civilian authority in different crisis scenario.
Moldova's armed forces are small, with long outdated capabilities. But their greatest weakness, analysts say, is the threat of infiltration by Kremlin agents.
On paper, they've got to be about 6,500 troops. In reality, there's probably about 3,000 of them. The equipment is very poor. And so I would say I would be very surprised if the GRU doesn't have quite a lot of agents or active members in the Moldovan military.
The country is sharply divided among Romanian speakers, European Union supporters, and people whose primary language is Russian. Its deep cultural, political, and social links are on display in the streets in festivities dating to the Soviet era, such as Victory Day, which marked the then Soviet Union's defeat of Nazi Germany in World War II. Observers say Moscow uses these ties to raise political tension between pro-Russian elements of society and the current pro-EU government.
Russia, unfortunately, is waging an hybrid warfare, using disinformation, propaganda, using local proxies in Moldova.
The infiltration of the Ukrainian army was a determining factor in the rapid advance of the Russian occupation at the start of the full-scale invasion. Moldova's government is now working to avoid a similar scenario. Moldova's leaders remain focused on their pending application to join the European Union and thus break free from the Kremlin's influence, yet another factor that makes their country a potential target for Russia. For Ricardo Marchina in Chisinau, Moldova, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
The UN Human Rights Council held an urgent debate to discuss the alarming rise in premeditated and public acts of religious hatred. The debate was convened at the request of Pakistan on behalf of several members of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation following the burning of a Quran by an Iraqi refugee in Sweden. My colleague Lori London speaks with VOA's Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
Urgent debates don't come along very frequently, and what triggered this was several weeks ago, actually on June 28th, an Iraqi refugee who lives in Sweden was given permission to burn the Quran in front of a mosque. This is because Sweden has a law defending freedom of speech, and that went counter to the fact that the man was burning a religious artifact, and this really angered a great many people around the world, not just in Muslim countries, but also in other countries where there are other forms of religious belief that people want to defend. As a consequence of that, Pakistan, at the request of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, asked for an urgent debate in order to discuss this situation, which they consider very serious. And so that is what happened today.
And did they talk about ways to try to not just express concern, but address this with any sort of action plan?
Well, and not a great action plan, but there was a lot of discussion, but I think it was important discussion. The High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, for instance, spoke about the harm that was caused by the desecration of the Quran and the growing religious hatred. And he emphasized the fact that there had to be religious tolerance for all people, respect for religion, as he said, because what happened otherwise was that there was a fear of weaponizing religious differences for political purposes. And he said that this could cause incitement to discrimination, hostility, and violence. And this was an extreme danger for most countries around the world.
VOA's Lori London and Lisa Schlein. Zimbabwe's government welcomed the lifting of an 18-month ban by FIFA, football's governing body, which will allow the country's team to compete internationally again. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
FIFA banned Zimbabwe from international matches in February 2022. The governing body acted after the government in Harare tried to take control of the Zimbabwe Football Association on the grounds it had failed to account for some funds and did not investigate alleged cases of sexual abuse toward female players by football officials. The situation have yet to be resolved, but FIFA chose to lift the ban as scheduled, with the draw for the next World Cup set to take place in Ivory Coast this Thursday. The end of the ban comes as a relief to football fans in Zimbabwe, where the sport has grown in popularity in recent years. Speaking to reporters in Harare on Tuesday, Sports Minister Kesty Coventry said the ban was beneficial to Zimbabwean football in the long run.
100% it was worth it. It was hard. It came at a certain cost that we all knew before we took the decision. But to get to this final stage where we can sit down and agree finally on a way forward that is going to benefit us as a country, 110% it was worth it.
Lincoln Mutasa is the chairman of a normalization committee mandated by FIFA to hold elections for the Zimbabwe Football Association and investigate the sexual abuse and corruption allegations. He had somewhat different view than Coventry about Zimbabwe being penalized.
It was hurting not only the sports people, but ourselves all the sports parents in the country. You know, you put so many hours to try and get your kid to excel in a sport. And when this doesn't happen, or when this is frustrated, it's a big mountain to climb. So I'm really delighted and really thank all the parties involved for finding each other.
FIFA's manager for development programs in Africa, Solomon Mudege, says that even though the ban has been lifted, Zimbabwe's government needs to stay out of the association's affairs. He said FIFA, the government, and the Zimbabwe Football Association need to have open communication to avoid disruptions in the future.
I can assure you in the next coming days, you will see a more transparent FIFA in how they share what is important and how they share the investments from governments, the investments from FIFA. It's something that we're proud of. So there's no change in FIFA's approach. What we do encourage, though, is more engagement within governments. We shouldn't be talking to each other in situations of crisis and conflict.
The end of FIFA suspension means Zimbabwe will be part of the draw Thursday and on the field when the World Cup qualifying matches begin in November. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the first week of July, Russian fighter jets repeatedly harassed U.S. drones conducting missions against ISIS in Syria. Pentagon Press Secretary Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder called on Russian forces to cease this type of reckless behavior and to behave like professional airmen. In defiance of established norms and protocols, on July 5th, Russian jets launched multiple parachute flares at U.S. drones searching for ISIS targets in Syria and flew dangerously close to the drones, forcing them to take evasive maneuvers. In addition, one Russian pilot positioned his aircraft in front of a U.S. drone and engaged the jet's afterburner, which greatly increases its speed and air pressure and reduces the operator's ability to safely operate the aircraft. A second dangerous incident occurred less than 24 hours later, on July 6th, when Russian military aircraft again dropped flares in front of several U.S. drones conducting their mission against ISIS targets in Syria. Once more, Russian fighter jets flew dangerously close to the U.S. drones and dropped flares in front of them. Brigadier General Ryder dismissed claims by the Russian Defense Ministry that Russian forces were conducting joint drills with Syrian forces and that the United States had violated airspace and deconfliction protocols. We have been in Syria for many years now, fighting ISIS as part of an international coalition, he said. We have rules in place, well-established processes and procedures, and have successfully deconflicted with the Russians over many years when it comes to safe operations in that region. So to suggest that somehow this is our fault is ridiculous. Lieutenant General Alex Grinkiewicz, commander of the 9th Air Force and Combined Forces Air Component Commander for Central Command, said in a statement, "These events represent another example of unprofessional and unsafe actions by Russian air forces operating in Syria, which threaten the safety of both coalition and Russian forces. We urge Russian forces in Syria to cease this reckless behavior and adhere to the standards of behavior expected of a professional air force so we can resume our focus on the enduring defeat of ISIS."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.